Blog Talk Radio.
Assalamu alaikum. This is Your Health is Your Wealth with your host, Rashad Sunni El-Amin. I want to thank you all for tuning in today. And hopefully you have your pens and pads ready to take notes on important issues on health. I want to thank first Imam Alfred Muhammad for allowing me this session on health every Thursday at 6 o'clock. Excuse me, from 7 o'clock to 8:30, pardon me. And also, he always asked me to ask you to send in whatever funds you can because it takes money to keep this show alive. He has this program in 7 days a week. He does 6 days a week, and I do the one segment on Thursday. And but he needs funds to keep the program going. So I always ask that you send funds to him if you can, whatever you can send. And I give you his address, and he would send it to Alfred Muhammad, M-U-H-A-M-M-A-D, Alfred, A-L-F-R-E-D, 817 Jackson Avenue, Linden, New Jersey, 07036. Linden is L-I-N-D-E-N. And he also has a fund going on, prostate fund. And he's asking donations for that. And if he can, you can send the monies to the same, the money orders or checks to the same address I just gave you. Or you can go to GoFundMe, Alfred Muhammad Prostate. That's Go, G-O-F-U-N-D-M-E, M-E, A-L, F-R-E-D, M-U, H-A-M-M-A-D-P-R-O-S-T-A-T-E. GoFundMe, Alfred Muhammad Prostate. And I'm sure he would appreciate whatever you can send. The brother needs funds himself to deal with his prostate problem. And hopefully you'll be generous and help the brother out. So again, I thank you all. As you know, I'm a holistic educator and teacher and a naturopath. And I always try to share good information, basic stuff that we need to know to maintain good health, or if you don't have good health, to start having good health. Things that your doctor normally never tells you. People as myself who are into holistic health will share this information to make things easier in your life. Find natural ways to heal problems that doctors normally can't reverse because they rely on drugs and also on surgery and things of that nature. So let's look at a few things before I get into some of the conditions that I want to deal with this evening. But let's look at nutrition, diet, and wellness first. And let's look at the four basic nutrients. The four basic nutrients that your body needs. And they would be water, carbohydrates, proteins, and fats. And these are the basic building blocks of a good diet. And by choosing the healthiest forms of each of these nutrients and eating them in the proper balance, you enable your body to function at its optimal level. Yes, at your optimal level. So this is very important. So we're going to go through all four of these. It won't be too long, but things that are very necessary for good health. First one would be water. As you know, brothers and sisters, the human body is two-thirds water. You're made up just like the planet. The planet is two-thirds water and one-third land. So water is an essential nutrient that is involved in every function of the body. and helps transport nutrients and waste products in and out of cells. And it's necessary for all digestive, absorption, circulatory, and excretory functions, as well as for the utilization of the water-soluble vitamins. It is also needed for the maintenance of proper body temperature. So by drinking an adequate amount of water each day, and some people, you know, they may need eight-ounce glasses, or you can ensure that your body has all it needs to maintain good health. So water is important, and the type of water you drink is also important. I'm thinking next week I want to touch on the different types of water and a lot of water scams that go on, things that they push in these stores, some of these waters that you think is supposed to be so hyped up to do this and that for you is no more than tap water that you get from your tap. So I want to touch on that next week. But anyway, water is very essential. You got to keep your body hydrated. And, you know, when you put water in your system, the brain is the first one to soak up water. It's like a sponge. You know, it needs water. And it's the first. And then after that, the brain decides where to distribute it to the other organs, which organ needs the most water at the time. So it's something that your body needs. You got to have water. Don't think that the soda pop is going to replace water, okay, or alcohol or a lot of these energy drinks and things like that. No, water. Pure water is what your body needs because that's what you're made of, mostly water. The other thing is carbohydrates. Now, carbohydrates supply the body with the energy it needs to function. And they are found almost exclusively in plant foods, such as fruits, vegetables, peas, beans, okay? And these are just things you should be incorporating into your body, you see? And you got to realize fresh fruits and vegetables all contain water. They all contain water. So if you're eating a lot of fresh fruits and vegetables, you are already absorbing water from these plants and fruits. So this is something that you should always try to maintain. Now, carbohydrates are divided into two groups. You got what they call simple carbohydrates and complex carbohydrates. And the simple carbohydrates, sometimes called simple sugars, includes fructose, which is fruit sugar, sucrose, which is table sugar, and lactose, which is milk sugar, as well as several other sugars. And fruits are one of the richest natural sources of simple carbohydrates. And then you have complex carbohydrates, also made up of sugars. But the sugar molecules are strung together to form longer, more complex chains. So complex carbohydrates include fiber and starches. So foods rich in complex carbohydrates include vegetables, whole grains, peas, and beans. These are some of the things that are rich in complex carbohydrates. And carbohydrates are the main source of blood glucose, which is a major fuel for all of the body's cells and the only source of energy for the brain and red blood cells, except for fiber, which cannot be digested by both simple and complex carbohydrates are converted into glucose. So the glucose is then either used directly to provide energy for the body or stored in the liver for future use. So when a person consumes more calories than the body is using, a portion of the carbohydrates consumed may also be stored in the body fat. Okay, so I hope you're listening and following along so you can understand how this whole thing operates in the body. Now, when you choose carbohydrate-rich foods for your diet, always select unrefined. Listen, unrefined foods such as fruits, vegetables, beans, whole grain products, as opposed to refined processed foods such as soft drinks, desserts, candy and sugar and donuts and all this nonsense. Refined foods offer few, if any, of the vitamins and minerals that are important to your health. They don't have what the natural rich carbohydrate foods have from the fruits and vegetables and beans and whole grain products, you see. Yes, this is very important. So in addition, if eaten in excess, now we're talking about these refined carbohydrates, over a period of many years, the large amounts of simple carbohydrates found in refined foods can lead to a number of disorders, including diabetes and hypoglycemia, which is low blood sugar. And yet another problem is that foods high in refined simple sugars often are also high in fats, which should be limited in a healthy diet. And this is why such foods, which include most cookies and cakes, as well as many snack foods, are usually loaded with calories, okay? And I know many out there are eating plenty of cookies and cakes and snack foods and all the rest of the stuff, because I see your shopping carts at the supermarket loaded with it. Anyway, a word is in order regarding fiber, a very important form of carbohydrate, and it's referred to in the past as roughage. But dietary fiber is the part of a plant that is resistant to the body's digestive enzymes. And as a result, only a relatively small amount of fiber is digested or metabolized in the stomach or intestines. And instead, most of it moves through the gastrointestinal tract and ends up in the stool. So although most fiber is not digested, it delivers several important health benefits. First, fiber retains water, resulting in softer and bulkier stools. Yes, that prevents constipation and hemorrhoids. See, a lot of you have hard stools, and you strain so hard, it may take you a week before you even have a bowel movement. And this is constipation and creates hemorrhoids. And we spoke about the hemorrhoids, was it last week, I believe it was, or the week before we touched on hemorrhoids and the problems of constipation. So a high fiber diet also reduces the risk of colon cancer. You know, there's a lot of colon cancer out here. That's because you eat that refined diet, those refined foods which have no fiber in it, which is creating this. You eat a lot of meats and things of this nature, donuts and cakes and candy that has no fiber, and it's creating problems. So a high-fiber diet, as I said, also reduces the risk of colon cancer, perhaps by speeding the rate at which stool passes to the intestine and by keeping the digestive tract clean. See, you want it clean to rain. See, when your intestines are clean, you don't have to worry about sickness and disease, you see? And when you have a strong clean colon, you have a strong immunity. Yes, because the majority of your immune system is in your intestines. So you want to keep it clean. You want to keep the feces out. You want to pass that stuff. You see, you want to go to the bathroom and just let that stuff out. You want to keep that contained in your intestine or in your colon, which will later on create colon cancer and other problems of the colon. You see, colitis and all the rest of that. Anyway, in addition, fiber, it binds with certain substances that would normally result in the production of cholesterol and eliminates these substances from the body. So in this way, a high fiber diet helps lower blood cholesterol levels and reducing the risk of heart disease. Yes, high fiber. This is very important, brothers and sisters. And, you know, it is recommended that about 60% of your total daily calories come from carbohydrates. And if much of your diet consists of healthy complex carbohydrates, you should easily fulfill the recommended daily minimum of 25 grams of fiber. I love to eat a nice high-fiber diet. I like things to go in and come out. I don't want to sit around having food in my stomach for a week or more. And some of you, I don't know, some of you hate to say it, for months and years. Yes, it pollutes your body, pollutes your whole environment. And you come down with all kinds of ailments and sicknesses because you don't eat properly, you see. Many of you out there have changed your diets and are doing well and you feel healthy and you feel energetic. You know, when you move stuff out, you feel more energy. You have high-fiber diet, stuff goes in and out, and you have more energy as opposed to food that just sits there and lays there for so many days and you can't seem to move it and you feel sluggish and tired. Yes. Anyway, so now let's look at protein, okay? Protein is essential for growth and development. It provides the body with energy, and, you know, it's needed for the manufacture of hormones, antibodies, enzymes, and tissues. So it also helps maintain the proper acid-alkali balance in the body. Got to have the right balance of acidity and alkalinity, brothers and sisters. So when protein is consumed, the body breaks it down into amino acids. Those are the building blocks of all proteins. And some of the amino acids are designated non-essential. This does not mean that they are unnecessary, but rather that they do not have to come from the diet because they can be synthesized by the body from other amino acids. So other amino acids are considered essential, meaning that the body cannot synthesize them and therefore must obtain them from what? The diet. So whenever the body makes a protein, when it builds muscle, for instance, it needs a variety of amino acids for the protein-making process. And these amino acids may come from dietary protein or from the body's own pool of amino acids. And if a shortage of amino acids becomes chronic, which can occur, if the diet is deficient in essential amino acids, the building of protein in the body stops and the body suffers. Yes, it suffers. So because of the importance of consuming proteins that provide all the necessary amino acids, dietary proteins are considered to belong to two different groups, depending on the amino acids they provide, and that is complete proteins, which constitute the first group and contain ample amounts of all of the essential amino acids. Now, these proteins, and I know some of you are meat eaters and all, you find them in meat, fish, poultry, cheese, eggs, and milk, okay? And incomplete proteins, which constitute the second group, contain only some of the essential amino acids, and these proteins are found in a variety of foods, including grains, legumes, and leafy beans, green and vegetables. So although it is important to consume the full range of amino acids, both essential and non-essential, it is not necessary to get them from meat, fish, poultry, and other complete protein foods. You don't have to eat those to get it, brothers and sisters. That's what you want, and that's how you want to get it. That's up to you. But if you're going to eat meat, the best meat possible, but don't consume so much of it. The best poultry possible and the best fish possible. Don't buy farm-raised fish, okay? And make sure your poultry is poultry, chickens, whatever, that run around freely, get exercise and all of that, you see? Okay, anyway, so in fact, because of their high fat content now, as well as the use of antibiotics and other chemicals in the raising of poultry and cattle, most of those foods should be eaten in moderation, if at all. You see, you got to remember how they raise this stuff. So if you're not investigating to see where these meats come from, you may be eating a lot of antibiotics and chemicals and other drugs. Yes, not known. So fortunately, the dietary strategy called mutual supplementation enables you to combine partial protein foods to make complementary protein. Proteins that supply adequate amounts of all essential amino acids. For instance, although beans and brown rice are both quite rich in protein, each lacks one or more of the necessary amino acids. However, when you combine beans and brown rice with each other, or when you combine either one with any of a number of protein-rich foods, you form a complete protein. That is a high-quality substitute for meat. Okay? And to make a complete protein, you can combine beans with any of these foods that I'm going to mention. Like I said, brown rice, corn, nuts, seeds, wheat, whatever. And you have complete protein. And I know there's people that say, oh, no, there's no way you can have a complete protein like that. Don't say that. I've been eating like this myself and many others, well, myself for about 34 years. Plenty of protein. Plenty of protein. Plenty of energy. Yes. And I'm up there in age. Okay? So don't say that it doesn't work. Now, also, you can combine brown rice with these other foods, and that's the beans and seeds. I mentioned those, right? Okay, and nuts and wheat. Anyway, you know, most Americans, they eat too much protein. And largely as a result of a diet high in meat and dairy products, okay, and it's just too much on the body. However, if you have reduce the amount of meat and dairy foods in your diet, you should make sure you get about 50 grams of protein a day to make sure that you are getting a great enough variety of amino acids in your diet. So add protein-rich foods to meals and snacks as often as possible. And, you know, you can eat nut butters. Yeah, have a whole grain bread, okay? Or add nuts and seeds to salads or and vegetable casseroles, or add the nuts and seeds into your smoothies, which I love to do. Oh, it makes so. Let me tell you something. Nuts and seeds added to your berries and your banana with some almond milk. And, ooh, it is so good, so smooth. I am telling you, you can't go wrong. It's a great meal by itself. Okay? Alrighty. So anyway, now, soybean products, you have to be very careful. I know they say it's high in protein, you know, things like tofu and soy milk. You know, they say they're complete proteins. And you have to be very careful with soy, especially men. I mentioned in the past how something that men don't need to use so much. Maybe the women can use it more so because it has a lot of estrogen in it. So you don't want to go overboard with that. And soy milk is an American concoction. Even the Japanese don't even use soy milk. Okay? They'll use tempeh or tofu, but not soy milk. Okay? That's Jethro Kloss. Back to Eden, who developed the soy milk here in America, which he fed to his daughter and all. But that's not the best thing or healthiest thing for you. Okay? So just be careful with that there. Yogurt is the only animal-derived complete protein source. If you like yogurt, that's something you can use. We know it's made from milk that is curdled by bacteria. And yogurt contains what they call lactobacillus acidophilus, another friendly bacteria needed for the digestion of foods and the prevention of many disorders, including candidiasis. So yogurt also contains vitamin A and D and many of the B-complex vitamins. But do not buy the sweetened flavored yogurts that are sold in supermarkets. These products contain added sugar and often preservatives. And instead, either purchase fresh, unsweetened yogurt from a health food store or make the yogurt yourself and sweeten it with fruit juices and other wholesome ingredients. So, you know, this is another thing that you can use. Now, let's look at fats. Fats. Now, we know they have these low-fat diets. Now, another fad that came out, beware and be careful of low-fat diets. Don't think for a moment that you don't need fat. Fat is necessary. You know, although much attention has been focused on the need to reduce dietary fat, the body needs fat. And during infancy and childhood, fat is necessary for normal brain development. And throughout life, it is essential to provide energy and support growth. So fat is, in fact, the most concentrated source of energy available to the body. However, after about 2 years of age, the body requires only small amounts of fat, much less than is provided by the average American diet. You know, the average American diet is saturated with fat. Oh, my God. That's why everybody is fat. Everybody's out of shape. Obese. Overweight. It's terrible. Anyway, excessive fat intake is a major causative factor in obesity, high blood pressure, coronary heart disease, and colon cancer, and has been linked to a number of other disorders as well. So to understand how fat intake is related to these health problems, it is necessary, brothers and sisters, to understand the different type of fats available and the ways in which these fats act within the body. So let's look at it. You know, fats are composed of building blocks called fatty acids. And there are three major categories of fatty acids. That's saturated, polyunsaturated, and monounsaturated. And these classifications are based on the number of hydrogen atoms in the chemical structure of a given molecule of fatty acid. So saturated fatty acids are found primarily in what? Animal products. Yes, moo. You know who that is. That's the beef or oink oink. And the other one with the chicken, I can't imitate that. But anyway. And also dairy items such as whole milk, cream, and cheese. And like I said, even veal. Yeah, lamb also. Yeah, beef, veal, lamb, pork, ham, all that stuff. And the fat marbling you can see in beef and pork is composed of saturated fat. And some vegetable products including, like palm kernel oil, and vegetable shortening are also high in saturates. Yes, vegetable shortening. Don't ever use Crisco. Oh, my God. Please don't use that stuff. Anyway, the liver uses saturated fats to manufacture cholesterol. Therefore, excessive dietary intake of saturated fats can significantly raise the blood cholesterol level, especially the level of low-density lipoproteins, that's the LDLs, okay? That's the lousy cholesterol or bad cholesterol, you see? Yes. Now, polyunsaturated fatty acids are found in greatest abundance corn, soybean, safflower, and sunflower oils. And certain fish oils are also high in polyunsaturates. And unlike the saturated fats, polyunsaturates may actually lower your blood cholesterol level. And in doing so, however, large amounts of polyunsaturates also have a tendency to reduce your high-density lipoproteins or your good cholesterol. So for this reason, and because, like all fats, polyunsaturates are high in calories for their weight and volume. And the NCEP guidelines state that An individual's intake of polyunsaturated fat should not exceed 10% of total caloric intake. Okay? Now, I must say this. Whenever you buy these oils, make sure they're organic and cold-pressed. Those are your better oils. Organic and cold-pressed. Okay? If it doesn't say cold-pressed, leave it alone. Anyway, let's look at monounsaturated fatty acids. And they're found mostly in vegetables and nut oils, such as olive. Oh, I love olive. Olive is a great peanut and canola. Now, these fats appear to reduce blood levels of LDLs, that's the lousy cholesterol, without affecting the HDLs, and that's the good cholesterol, in any kind of way. So, however, this positive impact upon LDL cholesterol is relatively modest. So the NCEP guidelines recommend that intake of monounsaturated fats be kept between 10 and 15% of total caloric intake. So although most foods, including some plant-derived foods, contain a combination of all three types of fatty acids, as one of the types usually predominates. Now, thus a fat or oil is considered saturated or high in saturates when it is composed primarily of saturated fatty acids. So such saturated fats are usually solid at room temperature. You ever see crystal? Solid. Yeah, solid at room temperature. And similarly, a fat or oil composed mostly of polyunsaturated fatty acids called polyunsaturated, while a fat or oil composed mostly of monounsaturated fatty acids is called monounsaturated. So, one other element. Trans fatty acids may also play a role in blood cholesterol levels, also called trans fats. These substances occur when polyunsaturated oils are altered through hydrogenation, a process used to harden liquid vegetable oils into solid foods like margarine and shortening, two dangerous foods, okay? So one recent study found that trans monounsaturated fatty acids raise your LDL, your lousy cholesterol levels, and behave much like saturated fats. And simultaneously, the trans fatty acids reduce your good cholesterol readings. So much more research is, you know, got to be research on this subject here, okay? And so we're still investigating this. But for now, however, it is clear that if your goal is to lower cholesterol, polyunsaturated and monounsaturated fats are more desirable than saturated fats or products with trans fatty acids. Just as important, your total calories from fat should not constitute more than 20 to 25% of daily calories. Now, essential fatty acids, there's good essential fatty acids out there. Like eating an avocado, great food, nice essential fat, good for the brain, you see? Very good. And it's something you should incorporate at least a few days a week. Put some in your salad, you see? Very, very important. Very, very important. So keep that in mind. Okay? And there's other things that you can use, other foods that have the essential omega-3 and fatty acids, which the body needs, you see? So, yeah, and there's good seeds out there also that have this. Anyway, so I would say, let me see if I want to go into our topic yet, or should I just, okay, I'm going to end that portion of my talk there. So there's some conditions I want to deal with that many of you may be suffering with, okay? But keep in mind what I I mentioned earlier. Now, I did promise you last week that I would speak on fibromyalgia syndrome, okay? And because we ran out of time last week, and I want to cover this and maybe a couple more conditions, time permitting. But looks, I don't know how many of you out there that may have this condition, and or you may know someone who is suffering with the fibromyalgia. And if you do, call them, tell them to tune in, to listen in, because this is very important. You see, you may have a family member, a friend, a coworker who may be suffering with this condition. But let's look at fibromyalgia. What is it? Well, fibromyalgia is a like rheumatic disorder characterized by chronic, achy, muscular pain that has no obvious physical cause. And it most commonly affects the lower back, the neck, the shoulders, the back of the head, the upper chest, and or the thighs, although any area or areas of the body may be involved. So the pain is usually described as burning, throbbing, shooting, and stabbing. You see? Yes. And the pain and stiffness is often greater in the morning than at other times of the day. So, and it may be accompanied by chronic headaches, strange sensations in the skin, insomnia, irritable bowel syndrome, you see? Yes. And also TMJ, temporal mandibular joint syndrome. And other symptoms often experienced by people with fibromyalgia include premenstrual syndrome, painful periods, anxiety, palpitations, memory impairment, irritable bladder, skin sensitivities, dry eyes and mouth, a need for frequent changes in eyeglass prescriptions, dizziness, and impaired coordination. And such activities as lifting and climbing stairs are often very difficult and painful. And depression is frequently part of the picture as well, brothers and sisters. So the most distinctive feature of fibromyalgia, however, is the existence of certain tender points and 9 pairs of specific spots where the muscles are abnormally tender to the touch. And let me... share those with you. And those points would be around the lower vertebrae of the neck, at the insertion of the second rib, around the upper part of the thigh bone, in the middle of the knee joint, in muscles connected to the base of the skull, in muscles of the neck and upper back, in muscles of the mid-back, on the side of the elbow, in the upper and outer muscles of the buttocks, you know what that is, yes. And most people with fibromyalgia have an associated sleep disorder known as alpha EEG anomaly. In this disorder, the individual's deep sleep periods are interrupted by bouts of waking-type brain activity, resulting in poor sleep. And some people with fibromyalgia are plagued by other sleep disorders as well, such as sleep apnea, restless leg syndrome, bruxism, and sleep myoclonus, a sudden rapid contraction of a muscle or a group of muscles during sleep as one is falling asleep. So, not surprisingly, brothers and sisters, given all these sleep difficulties, people with fibromyalgia often suffer from chronic fatigue that can range from mild to incapacitating. Okay? I couldn't get that word out. Okay, anyway, this disorder is much more common in females than in males, and most often begins in young adulthood. In most cases, symptoms come on gradually and slowly, and then they increase in intensity. And they can be triggered or made worse by a number of different factors, including overexertion, stress, lack of exercise, anxiety, depression, lack of sleep, trauma, extremes of temperature and or humidity, and infectious illness, okay? So in the majority of cases, symptoms are severe enough to interfere with normal daily activities. A significant number of people with fibromyalgia are actually disabled by the condition. So the course of the disorder is unpredictable. In some cases, clear up on their own. And some become chronic. And some go through cycles of flare-ups, alternating with periods of apparent remission. And that's amazing, right? Anyway, the cause or causes of fibromyalgia are really not known. Some evidence points to a problem with the immune system. Certain immunological abnormalities are common among people with fibromyalgia. Their significance and relationship to the syndrome are not understood. However, a disturbance in brain chemistry may also be involved. Many people who develop fibromyalgia have a history of clinical depression. Other possible causes that have been proposed include infection with Epstein-Barr virus, the virus that causes infectious mononucleosis, or with the fungus Candida albicans, chronic mercury poisoning from amalgam dental fillings, anemia, parasites, hypoglycemia, and hypothyroidism. So some experts believe that fibromyalgia may be related to chronic fatigue syndrome, which causes similar symptoms, except that in fibromyalgia, muscle pain predominates over fatigue, whereas in chronic fatigue syndrome, fatigue predominates over the pain. So because malabsorption problems are common in people with this disorder, higher than normal doses of all supplemental nutrients are needed. Wherever possible, it's best to use lingual vitamins and other supplements because they are more easily absorbed than tablets or capsules. You see? Now, one thing you should use, coenzyme Q10, at least 75 milligrams daily, and this improves oxygenation of the tissues, enhances the effectiveness of the immune system, and protects the heart. Let me spell that for you. Coenzyme Q10, which is, or you can just call it CoQ10. You go to the health food store, it just says for CoQ10. CoQ10, the number 10. CoQ10, 75 milligrams daily. Also, acidophilus. And you can buy this from any health food store. You know, candida infection is common in people with fibromyalgia, so acidophilus replaces the friendly bacteria destroyed by candida, okay? And try to use a non-dairy formula. They have the vegetarian formula, which is much better. And then you can also use lecithin, L-E-C-I-T-H-I-N. I didn't spell acidophilus for you, did I? Okay, so somebody raised their hand. Okay. Anyway, acidophilus is A-C-I, D as in David, O-P as in Peter, H-I-L-U-S, acidophilus. Okay? And then I just mentioned lecithin, L-E-C-I-T-H-I-N. And just use that as directed on the label, and same with acidophilus. And lecithin promotes energy, enhances immunity, and aids in brain function, and improves circulation. So this is something you can find in your health food store. You see, magnesium, very important, and use it as directed on the label also. And it's involved in energy production in many cells of the body, including the muscle cells, needed for sugar metabolism. You see, and you can use magnesium along with what they call malic acid, M-A-L-I-C acid. Okay? Also, vitamin A is good. You know, vitamin A is a powerful free radical scavenger that protect the body's cells and enhance immune function. So you can use 25,000 international units daily, or IU, and for about a month, and then you can reduce it down to about 10,000 IU daily, and for about a month or so, and then down to 800, and until you reduce it finally to about 400 IU daily. Okay, and these are some of the things, and good vitamin B complex is also good. Oh, yes, they help a lot. You know, just get a good multi B vitamin complex. It gives you energy. It's very good for brain function also, you see. Yes. So you can get them in injection form, you know, under doctor's supervision, which is really best if you want to go that way. You know, just see a physician about getting that. So anyway, let's look also at some maybe some herbs, which are very good. Very good for this problem. One is astragalus, S-A-S-T as in Thomas, R-A-G-A-L-U-S, astragalus. And echinacea, E-C-H-I-N-A-C-E-A. Both of these enhance your immune system, brothers and sisters. Astragalus is very powerful, I'm telling you. Also, olive leaf extract, very good for your immunity. Olive leaf extract, make sure you get some of that. Now, if you want to remove some parasites, which people who have this problem have, get black walnut. Walnut extract, very powerful for removing parasites out of your body. Very good. And also, teas that are brewed from burdock root. Burdock root is powerful for building immunity and detoxifying. That's B as in boy, U-R, D as in David, O-C-K. Burdock root. And dandelion also. Dandelion is also great detoxifier. You see? And red clover, another one. Red clover. It also promotes healing by cleansing the bloodstream and enhancing your immune function. So keep these in mind. I hope you're writing them down, you see. These are very good for you. And ginkgo biloba is great for improving circulation and for brain function. That's something else you can use. And you got the milk thistle that protects the liver. Use that. And, you know, if you need some good sleep, think about skullcap, S-K-U-L-L-C-A-P, or valerian root, V-A-L-E-R-I-A-N, valerian root. Get the extract. Don't make the tea. It'll stink up the place. But get the extract and put a few drops in a little bit of water. It's the best way to take it, believe me. I remember making that tea one time. I said, my God, it stinks in here. I said, I hope nobody comes to visit. But I found the extract was much better, you see. So keep that in mind, brothers and sisters. Also, you know, you got to make sure you drink plenty of liquids to help flush out toxins. And, you know, steam distilled water is your best, and some herbal teas. Also, fresh vegetable juices, they supply the necessary vitamins and minerals that the body needs, you see. And try to eat 4 to 5 small meals daily to keep a steady supply of protein and carbohydrates, you know, which are available for proper muscle function. So the body does not have enough fuel for energy, it will rob the muscles of essential nutrients, causing muscle wasting and pain. So remember, keep that in mind. And you may have to limit your consumption of green peppers and eggplant, tomatoes, and white potatoes. These foods contain solanine, which interferes with enzymes in the muscles and may cause pain and discomfort. You see? Do not eat meat dairy products or any other foods that are high in saturated fats, because saturated fats raise your cholesterol levels and interfere with circulation. And they also promote the inflammatory response and increase the pain. And also avoid fried foods. Please don't eat the fried foods. Fried foods are bad for you anyway, hard to digest. And the processed foods and the shellfish. Leave those alone. And white flour products that come in bread form or pasta form or just the donuts and cakes. Leave this stuff alone if you want to help this condition. And please do not consume any caffeine, alcohol, or sugar. Eating sugar in any form, including fructose, promotes fatigue, increases pain, and disturbs sleep, and weakens your immunity. Yes, it does. You see? So, trying to leave that alone. You may have to avoid wheat and brewer's yeast until your symptoms improve. Okay, and you got to have exercise. Take a daily walk. Do some stretching exercises. These are good for you. You see? Start slowly if you've been a couch potato for a while. Don't overexert yourself because you can aggravate the symptoms. So little at a time until you can increase your exercise, you know, time period. So don't get too strenuous in your first workout. Take your time. And be sure to give your body sufficient rest. And set aside at least 8 hours for sleep each night. And you can also take a hot shower or bath upon rising to stimulate the circulation and help relieve morning stiffness. And alternate between hot and cold water while showering. So studies have shown cold showers to be beneficial for relieving the pain of fibromyalgia. Huh? Yes. Take chlorophyll or green drinks. You see, these are very good. Spirulina. All these are very good for maintaining energy levels and to reduce muscle pain. Okay? And chronic pain sufferers, especially those with fibromyalgia and chronic fatigue syndrome, tend to be deficient in magnesium. You need magnesium. And, you know, those painkillers such as aspirin, ibuprofen, and Restoril are not usually effective at relieving the pain of fibromyalgia. So other approaches, including attention to diet, exercise, and nutritional supplements, are more likely to be a benefit. Or maybe you can use something like curcumin, which comes from turmeric, which is also great for pain and inflammation. Okay? Oh, there's so much more I can say on fibromyalgia. But you can always do your own research, try to find other things that you can do that will help you with this problem. You see? And you will get results. Yes, I tell you, if only we lived the right lifestyle, if only we ate properly, if only we exercised and did those things that the body needs to improve our health, we don't have to suffer with any of these things. A lot of us abuse ourselves. You understand? We abuse ourselves. We just do things that just create problems for our body, and we suffer, and you got to pay a price. When you don't live right, you got to pay a price. You understand? So keep this in mind. There's another one I want to touch on. Why do you have muscle cramps? Yes, I've had people tell me, oh, I suffer with muscle cramps, and I don't know what's causing it, especially at night. You know, it'd be affecting my legs, you know. But most muscle cramps occur at night and affect the legs, especially the calf muscles and the feet. So these kind of cramps occur more frequently in elderly people. Children may experience a type of muscle and leg pain often called growing pain. So muscle cramping is most commonly caused by an imbalance in the levels of calcium and magnesium in the body, and or a deficiency of vitamin E. And anemia, the use of tobacco and activity, fibromyalgia, arthritis, and even arteriosclerosis can also result in cramping, as can dehydration, stroke, hypothyroidism, or varicose veins, or more rarely the early stages of amyotrophic lateral sclerosis, ALS, or Lou Gehrig's disease. Okay? So the use of diuretic drugs for high blood pressure or heart disorders may lead to electrolyte imbalances, causing muscle cramps, and poor circulation also contributes to leg cramps. So think about it. You see? How many out there suffer with this problem? Yeah, you get in the bed and all of a sudden you get the cramps in the legs, you feel so uncomfortable. Magnesium is very important. Calcium and magnesium, your body needs these minerals, brothers and sisters. Calcium is the most abundant mineral in the body. So you would want to take a combination of calcium and magnesium. The calcium would be like 1,500 milligrams daily, and magnesium would be half of that, which would be about 750 milligrams daily, okay? And deficiencies are most often the cause of cramping in the legs and feet at night. Yes. So try to use the calcium and magnesium in what they call chelate, C-H-E-L-A-T-E, or citrate, C-I-T-R-A-T-E, in one of those two forms, either chelate or citrate. So you want to get that in order to relieve the pain. And vitamin E also. And you can start with 400 international units daily and increase slowly to about 1,000 international units daily. So this is going to improve the circulation, and deficiency may cause leg cramps while standing or walking. Especially good if cramping is related to varicose veins. These are the two main things you need to have. Potassium, also, maybe about 99 milligrams daily, needed for proper calcium and magnesium metabolism, and aids also in relieving muscle cramps. Yeah, potassium. P as in Peter, O, T as in Tom, A, S, S, I, U, M. About 99 milligrams daily. You get plenty of potassium from bananas. And there's magnesium in the bananas, too. You know, the little stringy parts of the banana? Pure magnesium. Don't throw it away. You don't like to eat them? Put them in your smoothie along with the banana. It'll blend right up. You'll never taste it. Also, a nice, good B-complex multivitamin, a multi-B-complex vitamin, I mean. This is very good for improved circulation and cellular function, enhances circulation, and may aid in maintaining proper muscle tone. You see? It's very good. And also you can get some vitamin C and vitamin D. You know, vitamin D is needed for calcium uptake. So you want to get maybe 400 IUs, international units, daily of vitamin D. Okay? Now, let me give you some herbs that are very good for this. Alfalfa. Yes, alfalfa is very good. Dong Quai. Let me spell that one for you. Dong, D-O-N-G, Quai, Q-U-A-I. This is a very good herb. Elderberry, E-L-D-E-R, berry. Get the extract. Ginkgo biloba extract, G-I-N-K-G-O, and biloba is B-I, B as in boy, I-L-O-B as in boy again, A. Ginkgo biloba extract. Also good is horsetail, yes, a horsetail grass, not the horse's tail, horsetail grass. Also good is saffron, which is a very good herb. Saffron is S AFFRON. Very good for circulation. You see? So this is good. Also, you can get what they call lobelia. L-O-B, as in boy, E-L-I-A, lobelia extract. And you can rub this on the affected area, which helps to relieve muscle spasms. You see? And if you want to sleep good, the valerian root again. Okay? V, as in Victor, A-L-E-R-I-A-N, valerian root. Take it at bedtime. Helps to relax the muscles. So this is something you can do. Also, you know, get plenty of dark green and leafy vegetables in your diet. Kelp. Kelp is good. K-E-L-P. This is from the sea. Drink plenty of water, distilled water preferably, to flush out the toxins that are stored in the muscles. And you should do this every 3 hours throughout the day. Or you can, you know, also massage the muscles and use heat to relieve pain, you see? And so these are just some of the things that we can do every day to help this condition, okay? And if you have cramps during the day while you're active, then you need to consult your healthcare provider. This can be a sign of impaired circulation or arteriosclerosis, you see? And if cramping occurs after walking and is relieved when you stop, you can suspect impaired circulation also, you see? So these are just some things we can do for this condition. Okay, we're doing pretty good. It's 8 o'clock. I'm going to give it about another 15 minutes. I'm going to maybe share another condition with you. We have a few here, and I know that some of you may be suffering with one or the other. One is pancreatitis, and the other one was ulcerative colitis. I'm trying to figure out which one I really want to do. I was thinking about pancreatitis. That's inflammation of the pancreas. And there's some of you out there that have this condition. So let's look at pancreatitis. Okay? And we, I just said it's inflammation of the pancreas resulting from an obstruction of the pancreatic duct. Yeah, the duct, D-U-C-T. Now, this obstruction, brothers and sisters, can be caused by the presence of gallstones, scarring, often from alcohol-related damage, or a cancerous tumor. Alcoholism is by far the leading underlying cause of pancreatitis. That's why I tell you every time I get on this program, leave alcohol alone. It's not meant to be in your body. That stuff you drink, that sneaky Pete and all the rest of that, Johnny Walker and all these other drinks that you think is so good and you want to go to the bar and socialize. Oh, I'm going to have me a social drink. All that stuff is killing you. It's just terrible. Anyway, so this alcoholism, like I said, is by far the leading underlying cause of pancreatitis in men. But in women, it is mostly linked to bile tract disease, bile, B-I-L-E. Pancreatitis can also come about as a result of viral infection, abdominal injury, obesity, poor nutrition, and the use of certain drugs. Yes. Now, the disease can be either acute or it can be chronic. Now, acute pancreatitis usually causes severe pain that comes on suddenly, starting in the area of the navel and radiating to the back. And the pain is typically exacerbated by movement and relieved by sitting. It may be accompanied by nausea and vomiting and sometimes severe. So other symptoms include upper abdominal swelling and distension, excessive gas, upper abdominal pain described as burning or stabbing, fever, sweating, hypertension, muscle aches, and abnormal fatty stools. Now, chronic pancreatitis is a condition in which the inflammation has caused irreversible changes in the microscopic structure of the gallbladder tissue, and repeated episodes of gallbladder infection and gallstones are often involved. So the symptoms of chronic pancreatitis may be hard to distinguish from those of acute pancreatitis, except that the pain tends to be chronic rather than coming on suddenly. In addition, chronic pancreatitis may be punctuated with periodic episodes of acute disease. So because the pancreas is the gland that produces the hormones insulin and glucagon, which regulate blood sugar levels and contribute to digestion, pancreatitis, especially if chronic, often leads to glucose intolerance, which is diabetes, and digestive difficulties. So, brothers and sisters, what are we going to do when you have that problem? Or if you do have that problem, what can you do? What is things that you can do? Just look at it. First, I would suggest chromium picolinate. Chromium, yes, C-H-R-O-M as in mother, I-U-M. Chromium picolinate. P as in Peter, I-C-O-L-I-N-A-T-E. About 300 micrograms, not milligrams, micrograms. That's M-C-G. 300 micrograms daily. Now, this is important in maintaining stable blood sugar levels. Yes, especially diabetics, you got to have this. Calcium and magnesium again. And, you know, like I said, calcium works closely with magnesium. So the magnesium counteracts glandular disorders, and you should use it in what they call a chelate form, C-H-E-L-A-T-E. So that's calcium, magnesium combined, 1,500 milligrams of calcium and 1,000 milligrams of magnesium, you see? And you can use something called pancreatine, P-A-C-R-E-A-T-I-N. Use it as directed in the label or take with food. This is a pancreatic enzyme deficiency which is common in people with pancreatitis. So you might have to take some pancreatine. You see? So this is something you should look into. Also a nice, good vitamin B complex, which you may take 50 milligrams three times daily. This is anti-stress vitamin, you see? Now, vitamin C is also important, maybe 1,000 milligrams four times daily and up. Yes, coenzyme Q10 would be good too, 75 milligrams daily. But let's look at some herbs that will help this condition. How about cedar berries? C-E-D-A-R, berries. Very good. Echinacea, E-C-H-I-N-A-C-E-A, or gentian root. G-E-N-T-I-A-N root. Golden seal, pardon me. Stimulate and strengthen the pancreas. All these stimulate and strengthen the pancreas. Okay? But don't take golden seal internally on a daily basis for more than 1 week at a time. And do not use it if you're pregnant. Okay? And use it with caution if you are allergic to ragweed. Okay? Now, dandelion root stimulates bile production and improves the health of the pancreas. Also, licorice root supports all glandular functions. But don't you overuse it, though, because it can elevate your blood pressure. And do not use this herb on a daily basis for more than 7 days in a row, and avoid it if you have high blood pressure, brothers and sisters, okay? Yes. Now, if you develop symptoms of pancreatitis, call your physician. This is an extremely serious condition that requires medical attention, too. Eat a diet low in fat and sugar. This is very important for recovery, okay? And make sure you don't consume any alcohol in any form, please. And if your doctor prescribes antibiotics, be sure to consume maybe some kefir, K-E-F-I-R, or yogurt, and add some form of acidophilus to the program. And if you smoke, stop. Recent studies point to a distinct link between chronic pancreatitis and cigarette smoking. Leave those doggone cigarettes alone. Cigarettes don't belong in your body. Smoke. You like smoke that much? Go to a fire and inhale some of that smoke. You like smoking so much. See how that affects you. Okay? Leave that stuff alone. Fool on one end, fire on one end, and a fool on the other. That's the old saying we have. Anyway, these are some of the things you can do and some of the things you can avoid. Okay? So keep that in mind, brothers and sisters. Please, please, please take this thing seriously. Pancreatitis is not something you want to suffer with. Okay? Please, brothers and sisters, don't be foolish. Take heed to this information. I'm sharing something with you that's very important, brothers and sisters. Very, very important. You see? Well, I don't know what else I want to cover. I'm trying to run short on time. And I was thinking about maybe doing one more, but I don't know if I have time. I'll just say this. Let me say this. I know I'm not going to have enough time to do another condition. But as I always say, go back to nature. Go back to eating from the garden. Put the foods in your body that your body recognizes, that your cells recognize. And you can avoid all these conditions or reverse the conditions. But you have to be in tune with nature. Very important. Some of you have or all out of tune with nature. Everything in your life is artificial. Artificial food, artificial lifestyle, artificial wigs and hips and breasts and all this other stuff. I mean, it's just eyelashes. Who else? What else? Huh? Yeah, artificial. Artificial mind. It's just terrible. Go back to being natural. Natural is the best. You see? There's no beauty in artificialness. That's just ridiculous. That's not you. That's just fake. Be you. Be natural. Be the way God made you. You see? You can appreciate that more. And it's better for you. Why put all these things on that just going to create problems in your life? You see? You're already born beautiful, whether you want to believe it or not. But beauty comes from the inside out. Yes, it comes from the inside out. Like the Temptations always said, beauty's only skin deep. Yeah, 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 that's right. Yeah, you want to believe it or not? You think beauty is only in the physical? Yeah, sometimes you can be a very beautiful-looking lady or a very handsome man, and your looks to be gone overnight. So where's the beauty at? You see, some of you don't age and lose all that. Your skin's going to sag, and the rest of your body going to sag, and your teeth don't fall out and everything else. So it's not going to last. Beauty's only skin deep, okay? So bring the beautiful aspect of yourself out. I've met some what people call ugly looking physically, but some of the most beautiful aspects. I mean, just some of the beauty that just comes out from them. You see? You don't even look at that physical aspect. Yeah. Remember that. Beauty comes from within. Anyway, Brothers and sisters, I thank you for tuning in, and I hope that you all got something out of this talk this evening, and hope you all benefit from the information I shared with you. If you have any of these conditions, or if you know anybody that has the conditions, please share this information with them. Don't be selfish and hog it to yourself. You see, take what you learn and share with others. We're supposed to share information. You see? Again, I thank you. You all have a nice evening. Have a nice meal. And make sure you wait 3 hours after you eat before you go to sleep. Okay? Anyway, until next week, I greet you all. Assalamu alaikum.